afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, March 31st, 2008. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by Savannah Black, offering raw shea butter direct from Ghana. Also, look out for Savannah Black's black soap, direct from Africa, coming soon. For details, visit www.savannahblack.net. Well, I'm so excited to have you here today. I can't believe that we are in the last day of the month of March and spring is already here. It seems like just yesterday we were putting our Christmas tree outside. But anyway, here we are warming up to a new season, and I have a whole new slew of shows that I have lined up for you. Today, we are going to be talking with Robert Gordman, the author of The Must-Have Customer, 7 Steps to Winning the Customer You Haven't Got. Now, since we all can't have enough customers, this is going to be a really great show, and I'm excited about picking Robert's brain about how we can make sure we have all the must-have customers in our arsenal that we can. But before we bring Robert in, I'd like to introduce you to my guest indie co-host today. His name is Mike Arsenault. He is the owner of Emily Skin Soothers in Ipswich, Massachusetts. Welcome to the show, Mike. How are you?
Thanks. Great. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. Now, tell us a little bit, Mike, about your business. I have to say that I have such a soft spot in my heart for Mike, not only because he's a member of the Indie Beauty Network, but because he has pictures of his daughter plastered all over his website, emilyskinsoothers.com. Tell us a little bit about how you started your business, Mike, and how your daughter figures in there.
She's basically the inspiration for the whole thing. I'm an acupuncturist and herbalist, and she was born just 2 years ago with some baby eczema, and I didn't want to put anything harsh on her skin, so I decided I better make something myself. And when I did, I ended up using it with customers and clients in my acupuncture practice, and the results were so good that just became a whole other business on its own.
And did you plan it that way from the beginning, Mike?
Not at all. I just had to make something very simple and effective for her, and because we saw such good results with her, I used it with my patients, and some people were coming back with crazy results talking about, you know, getting off of topical steroids that they've been on for years and so on and so on. So it was just more things that happened from being inspired by my daughter.
So, Mike, now you've been indie for a long time before Emily Skin Soothers and your daughter came along, right? You've got acupuncture and chiropractic as your areas of expertise.
Yeah, acupuncture and herbs, not chiropractic, but I work with a lot of chiropractors.
I'm sorry, I don't know where that came from.
That's okay. They're closely related.
Take us back into, you know, your decision to go into business for yourself. I'm sure you had, you know, opportunities to work for other people to showcase your expertise, but you decided to have your own business. How did that decision come about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I took it very gradually myself. I was a community college professor before and got into acupuncture as a patient, was intrigued by it, really fell in love with the whole art and history of it and the effectiveness. So I went to school while I was still a community college professor, and then I built my practice part-time while I was a professor still. And when it came to a point where I was able to make the leap, I jumped into another position with a hospital part-time, kept my private practice, and left teaching just after getting tenured.
Oh, wow. But now, so what sorts of things did you consider? That's a big lifestyle change.
Yeah, I mean, I was very careful about it. I built up my practice for a couple years, and like I say, I had an opportunity actually where a friend was working in a hospital. She was going off to China. She told a number of colleagues about the position. I got it, luckily, by applying and beat out my other colleagues, and I was able to start in the summer, and I still had a fallback position where I thought, well, if this doesn't work, I'll still go back in the fall and go back to teaching and continue to build my practice. So I was very careful about how I went about making that leap, but it was a very planned out, concerted effort to build the practice so it would carry me and I'd be able to leave the steady position with the benefits and everything else.
It all sounds so organized. Was starting Emily Skin Soothers that organized too?
Hard to say. I mean, Now I'm just a full-time acupuncturist, and this was above and beyond. I've continued to be an acupuncturist, and it was just extra work, and we've had some incredible surges in growth, so I don't know how organized, but I try to keep on top of it.
Well, you know, and that's something that's kind of interesting that I've discovered about being indie personally and working with so many indie business owners is that because the flow of business can be unpredictable when it's something that comes about as a result of circumstance, like you had a baby with eczema, so you needed
right.
something, as opposed to something that you planned, like your chiropractic business. I'm sorry, does
that's
that
okay.
make sense? Like your acupuncture business.
Yep.
You really do have fewer options sometimes in terms of planning out every step.
Absolutely. I mean, I definitely have plans and goals and visions, but sometimes things just hit you and you have to respond, and it's pretty exciting and wild. And, you know, I've definitely cut back on sleep at times, and I've missed family vacations at times, so it's been interesting.
Yeah, well, having a baby will cut back on sleep already, and
that's
then starting
true.
A new business cuts back on sleep more. So how do you and your wife kind of handle all these changes as a couple, as a family?
I think we've just been excited, and it's been fun. Anything with the baby, I could care less if she keeps me up. It's just fun to be with her.
Right, right.
And then this stuff has been pretty rewarding and exciting. We get a lot of amazing feedback and testimonials from people who had tough conditions and really responded well and write us to let us know, so it's very exciting. And this product is based on a whole philosophy of mine with acupuncture to, you know, use as little in the way of chemicals or any
mm-hmm.
ingredients as possible, so I feel really good about providing something healthy and useful. So to me, when I work hard, I just remind myself that I chose it, and because I chose it, it's not really hard. I do it with ease as much as I can.
And, you know, your Emily Skin Soothers business is such a natural, logical extension of what you're already doing. In terms of your mindset, there probably wasn't much of an adjustment at all.
No, it's absolutely derived from my training. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's only Chinese herbs. It's three herbs, beeswax and olive oil. That's it. So I based it on Chinese herbal formulas. It's just part of my acupuncture and herbal training, so it's definitely a product based on that career anyway.
And, you know, that's such a wonderful example for some of our listeners to follow, no matter what your profession or your training or background is that whatever you're doing now, there's probably some logical business extension of it mm-hmm. that you can use to create a business that helps other people while you also generate a profit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun.
And so at Emily Skin Soothers, you basically took herbs that you were already familiar with
mm-hmm.
and mixed them, you know, together in a format that created a salve and jars and labels and website.
Yep, and a couple other products have grown out of it since, and we're working on some others just from patient demand or customer demand and feedback. But, yeah, it's been a natural growth. It's been very interesting. And I think because of the storyline, we've gotten a lot of lucky exposure and press.
Yeah, Emily's really cute.
Thank you.
I bet she helps a lot, too. That does.
It does. That
does, of course, help, too, Mike, because so many people, they want to do business with people like you.
Oh, that, I hope so. But it's also, yeah, she was the inspiration, and that story, I guess,
mm-hmm.
touches a lot of people because we got national news exposure, actually, which grew
really?
Business, yeah, precipitously. It was amazing. We had local newspapers write about it, and then the local NBC doctor, Deanna Lights, who does like a health cast here in the Boston area, she picked it up and did a really nice segment, played in this region, and she said to me, just in passing, she said, oh, it's NBC, so we might release it over the wire, and it might play in other places. It played all over the country. And we
by the way.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. And did that ever happen to you when you were just doing acupuncture?
No. Nothing like that. That was insane. I mean, we had a 3-week back order.
Mm-hmm.
It was just crazy. And stores were calling us to carry the product. It was a blessing.
Well, that'll help you get your must-have customer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Robert Gorman is an expert on getting our must-have customers, and some of the things that he talks about in his book are quite interesting, not the least of which is that it's not enough to have a niche mm-hmm. in business anymore. And, of course, we all know, you know, you can't just throw spaghetti at the wall and hope something sticks. You do have to have a focus.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about the type of customer that you would describe as your must-have customer.
Well, I definitely envision that person as being someone who's similarly minded, who thinks about what they put on their skin, the idea being that anything you put on your body ends up in your body. So someone who's aware of that and trying to limit the amount of exposure they have and wants something incredibly simple. Ours is, you know, no color, unscented, et cetera. So very, very simple. Someone who's, you know, aware of that, or someone who's tried a lot of other things and hasn't had good success. So those are the people that I shoot for. And we had a must-have customer in Whole Foods. I really wanted to get into Whole Foods in our region. And I kept mentioning in all the articles and all the news exposure that Whole Foods was considering it. Whole Foods was considering it. And we basically built a demand in Whole Foods so that they rushed it through and began to carry it because so many people were demanding it of them.
Wow. Well, see, you know, another great point to be made there is that, you know, you can plan and plan and plan, but sometimes the business just takes you in a particular direction.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I sometimes call this, you know, just putting yourself out there and mm-hmm. taking the chance. And it, you know, it sounds like while there was obviously always some risk involved in a new business, that for you, because it was a logical extension and because something that you wanted to do, that is, you know, have a product that was nice for your daughter, everything just kind of fell together in a way that you really couldn't have planned.
No, not really. No planning for the way it's grown. Just a lot of hard work and envisioning and hoping, but it just happens.
So what do you think, like, based on your experience now with two successful businesses that we know of, there may be some others we haven't even talked about, and I bet you'll probably have more as you grow, but What one or two tips would you offer to someone who, you know, has a business or has a job, but they see an opportunity to kind of, maybe there's something else here. What would you suggest they do to kind of look at that and decide whether they should take the time to think about pursuing it?
I guess, to test out the waters and see what kind of response they get from people first, because you don't want to put too much into it without knowing that there's a need and that there's a good response. And, you know, I'm very measured in my own taking chances and leaps. So I would say, you know, to make clear plans, contingency plans if things don't work as expected, and and then have a really clear vision, because if you know where you want to end up, then you can take steps to get there. If it's vague in general, it's really hard to reach your goals.
And then is there something to be said, too, for just going with the flow once it's out there and the opportunities that come along to be, you're in a position to capitalize on them?
Absolutely. I mean, there's an expression that I love. It says, you can't fight the waves, but you can learn how to surf. There's no way, you know, the situation is a situation. You just have to respond to it. And if you resist it, you waste a lot of energy. But if you figure out how to work with it, then you can get up there and surf.
I like that. You can't fight the waves, but you can learn how to surf. It's like parenthood.
Yeah, that's right. Your children teach you how to respond. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a really great analogy. So your must-have customer is somebody that kind of has the same mindset as you, and that's really interesting. I think it's instructive for all indie business owners, because so many people buy products and services because of the person behind them and not just because of the products themselves. Have you found that to be true?
I think so. I mean, you want to be able to trust where something is coming from, especially if it's related to your health and well-being. And, I mean, there's so many products and so many product lines out there, so how do you differentiate? You know, how do you speak to someone? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if they're thinking or believing the same thing as you, it's easier to get your point across.
Yeah. Well, you've got a great story, and I got to tell you, that picture of you and Emily together, I know I may have be thinking about one that's kind of dated, but sign me up for some skin soothing salve.
Thank you.
After taking a look at that touching photo, we're going to come back after our first break and talk with Robert Gordman, the author of The Must Have Customer: 7 Steps to Winning the Customer You Haven't Got. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio, where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. I'd like to tell you guys that next week, Monday, April 7th, my guest is Susan Harrow of PR Secrets. She's also the author of Sell Yourself Without Selling Your Soul, and she'll be here to talk with us about the art of blowing our horns. And, of course, you got to do quite a bit of that, or at least have someone to do it for you when you are in business for yourself. Well, today's guest knows a lot about that, and he also can share with us not only how to blow our horns, but how to use our horns to get the must-have customers that we need to be successful. Robert Gordman is the author of The Must-Have Customer, 7 Steps to Winning the Customer You Haven't Got. He is the president of the Gordman Group, a consulting firm that works with senior management of Fortune 500 companies and also indie business owners, too, because he's on our show. Bob held executive management positions in various companies for 20 years. He served for 5 years as senior consulting partner for the Gallup organization, specializing in strategic planning, and he is a member of the Gallup Management Hall of Fame. Welcome to Indie Business Radio, Bob.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, Bob, tell us a little bit about your background and how you started the Gordman Group and what your background areas of expertise are.
Well, I grew up in the retail business and spent 26 years in that industry in various positions. The company I was with was doing about $6 million when I started there, and when I left, the organization was doing over $300 million. And went into consulting about 18 years ago, started with Gallup, as you covered in the introduction, and then... About 12 years ago, started the Gordman Group, and our group is unique in that all of our consultants are former senior executives of corporations, so they not only are smart people, but they're smart people with 25 and 30 years of experience.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I've been to your website, and I can see that you do have quite a collection of really fantastic associates there. And so I congratulate you on that, and thank you for coming to share with us some of your expertise that you've garnered over the years. I'd especially like to focus on something that your book talks a lot about. Actually, you have more than one book that talks a lot about this, and this is the sweet spot of your business. Tell us, Bob, what is the sweet spot?
Well, it's a really interesting concept, and, I think one of the examples that everybody relates to is Starbucks. And, you know, Starbucks, of course, is a coffee shop, and there's many places that sell coffee. You can practically buy coffee in every other store in some version. But the vision of Howard Schultz was not just to have a coffee store, but to create what he called the third place, which is if you're not at home, which is where you spend most of your time, or you're not at work, where you spent the second most amount of your time, he wanted Starbucks to be the third place. So instead of just opening another coffee shop, he opened Starbucks and created a total experience for the Starbucks customer. So what he's really done is taken Starbucks out of the coffee shop business, and it doesn't make any difference who's selling coffee. coffee anymore, because if you want that total experience of Starbucks, there's only one place to get that. So essentially, he's built a sweet spot around the third place, and coffee just happens to be the product.
We're talking with Bob Gordman, the author of The Must-Have Customer, 7 Steps to Winning the Customer You Haven't Got. If you have a question or comment about the sweet spot of your business, do join us, 800-773-0355. So, Bob, one of the things, dovetailing with what you said, that your book talks about, too, is that it's just not enough to have a good product anymore.
Well, it's, you know, it, when you just simply have a product, you're vulnerable to price competition. Somebody can take a similar or comparable product, sell it for less money, and now all of a sudden you're in a price war. When you've thought through the sweet spot and you've created a sweet spot, you take it out of that rat race, just the way Starbucks has taken the price of a cup of coffee out of the coffee competition, because you're selling something much greater than that. One of the stories, Donna, I like to tell, and I know we have limited time here, so I'll just do a very abbreviated version, but if you want to buy a tube of Crest toothpaste, you can buy a tube of basic Crest toothpaste for $1.99 at Walmart, for $2.14 at Target, or for $2.49 at Walgreens. And it's identically the same product. They're selling it at 3 different prices, and in many cases on the same street corners all over America. But Walmart has built their super sweet spot around price, and everything they do in their corporation is designed to support a price sweet spot by keeping costs down. Target's done it around hip and cool, and people will pay a few cents more to shop at Target. And Walgreens has built their super sweet spot around convenience, and they can charge the highest price of anybody, but if time is a valuable commodity to you, which it is to many, many people, you'll simply run in and buy the item at Walgreens. So here's a highly visible product being sold at 3 different prices, virtually on the same street corner, and you've got 3 different retailers with 3 different sweet spots surviving and doing very well.
Right, and then when they put those products on sale and lower their price, I know Walmart doesn't do that much, but the other two do put the products on sale and lower the price anymore, then it basically depends on their ability to sell you other stuff once you're in there to buy the toothpaste.
Absolutely, but still, the price-oriented customer is going to go where the lowest price is, and if somebody is driven by convenience and time, paying 50 cents more isn't going to make any difference to them. So it's really about what is the total experience, and in Walgreens' case, it's convenience. Everything they do in their company is about making sure they're in stock and having a great selection of product on the shelf, and price has become absolutely a non-issue in their business.
So your sweet spot boils down to finding your niche, so to speak, and then sort of slicing and dicing it down to its lowest common denominator and then aiming at it.
Well, I tell you, Donna, I like to kind of explain that in a slightly different way, and that is it's about deciding who's the customer you want to serve. In the case of Walgreens, it's the convenience-driven customer, and learning everything you can possibly learn about that customer that's important to them, and then delivering that within the business model. So within Walgreens, with a convenience model, it's stores that are easy to drive up to, and by the way, they pay the highest rents in the retail business just to be on the best street corners.
Right.
It's about being in stock and never out of stock, and they have a whole distribution model that supports that, that's very expensive to operate. And ease of in and out. So everything they do is about convenience, and because they've studied the customer that's convenience driven, and they've learned what their rules are.
And they do have drive-thrus.
Oh, and they have drive-thrus, and they have convenience foods in the store, so you can pick up a Coke or whatever it is. But they have really studied the customer. They've done the research, so that they know more about the convenience-driven customer than anybody, and that's who they serve. They're not worried about Walmart's customer. They do not care about Walmart's customer or what price Walmart is selling something for, because the motivation is completely different for that customer.
And then these exercises translate into landing your must-have customer, which is, as you say in your book, you talk a lot about that being more than just satisfying customers.
Absolutely. You want to have customers that love you and are passionate about you, which again takes you further out of that price competitive model and worrying about what somebody else is selling the service for. And by the way, this applies to every industry. It's got nothing to do with just retail. In our book, The Secrets of the Super Sweet Spot, which we've just released, I mean, we talk about individual stockbrokers. We talk about a doctor who has done it in his practice. We talk about a car salesman who has done it in his practice, as well as some very large companies. So it's not a big company, small company concept. It's not a retail-only concept. It's really about being absolutely clear about who do you want to serve, who's your must-have customer, doing the homework to understand their rules, and then delivering against those rules better than anybody else in your marketplace, and then competition becomes irrelevant. You're not trying to beat competition. You're trying to serve customers.
Now, that's a very helpful way to look at it. And, Mike, I know Mike Arsenault of Emily Skin Soothers has done some of that in his business simply by virtue, I think, of tying himself and the story of his daughter into the product he sells. Mike, can you comment on that?
Yeah, I think the points are definitely very insightful. And my sweet spot, the people that I serve, knowing where they're coming from with a similar philosophy to mine of, you know, wanting a product that they care really about what goes in it, so what goes into their skin and what goes in their body, I've been able to cater to them. And I think what Bob was saying, because they're happy with the experience, not only with the product but with the experience of it, they're telling friends and they're helping to get me retail stores because it meshes with their own philosophy. And beyond just the product being useful to them, they're very responsive, I guess, to the whole experience, and that's been very helpful to me.
Yeah, and Mike, I couldn't agree with you more, because there is absolutely no more powerful advertising than word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And the old saying that birds of a feather flock together.
Absolutely.
There's some truth to that. So people that have interest in the quality level of the product that you're producing and creating, their friends probably have similar interests, and they're going to talk about that, and you just can't spend enough money to advertise as effectively as that is.
Yeah, no, I like to liken it to spitting in the wind, whereas, you know, if a customer's happy with it and they actually bring it to a store and ask the store to carry it, that already says volumes to the buyer, who's going to then recommend it on that recommendation, so it's been great that way.
Absolutely.
Hey, Bob, I know your book goes into some detail, too, about communicating with that must-have customer. And, of course, you know, it's a given that that's important. But when you say communication, do you find that broadly, narrowly? What are some of the things that figure into that?
Well, Donna, one of the things we did with the book is we kind of made it almost like a workbook to help people actually implement what we're talking about. So it's not just stories. And when you talk about communication, whether it's advertising in the business-to-consumer world or it's communication in the business-to-business world, there's two critical elements to that. Number one, you have to know who is the right person to communicate with. Because everybody, as Mike just described in his business, everybody's not your customer. I mean, his only real potential customers are people that want a premium product and are willing to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So getting out to people that are price-oriented is simply wasting your money. So things like unfocused kinds of advertising, generally newspaper, sometimes radio, is really not very productive. So number one, you want to try to figure out how do you get to the audience that is absolutely interested in your product.
And
then,
Bob, can I ask you something before you move on to number two? For businesses that are very small, indie business owners, that is, you know, independent businesses that are, they aren't even small because, you know, the government defines small as 500 or fewer employees. So we're talking to people that are not even small by that definition. Then it's even more important, wouldn't you say, to inject yourself and your story into your whole communication model with your customers?
Well, I think, Donna, it's what's important is being able to communicate the message consistently that's important to those must-have customers. So just for example, again, since, you know, Mike is on with us, you want people that are interested in the quality of what he's created, number one, and then the story you want to tell has got to be about the quality, and nothing else. So you've got to tell people the story that they want to hear. If somebody's interested in low price, that's the story you got to talk about, is about low price. One of the companies that we case studies that we talk about in the must have customers is an organization called Lincoln Industries.
Lincoln Industries, I remember reading about that. I'm gonna just take a quick break here, Bob, so we don't have to get a great story up for our listeners. This is Indie Business Radio. My engineer is telling me we have to take a break, so we'll be right back. Don't touch that mouse.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here this afternoon with Robert Gordman, the author of The Must-Have Customer, 7 Steps to Winning the Customer You Haven't Got, and my guest indie co-host, Mike Arsenault of Emily Skin Soothers in Ipswich, Massachusetts. Bob, before we took our break, you were getting ready to tell us a story about
Lincoln Industries. Yeah, the story, Don, is kind of interesting because when I started working with them 16 years ago, this was a company with 40 employees and today has over 600. And what they did was they had a business, they were in the plating business, but a very good quality plater. And what they've evolved to is a company that actually produces finished parts for companies that appreciate high-quality product. So their largest customer is Harley-Davidson. So the next time you see a bright, shiny Harley go down the street, Lincoln Industries is making all those beautiful chrome parts. Mm-hmm. So they've moved from a commodity business, which was plating, into a super sweet spot, which is large productions of high-quality finished parts. And have basically completely changed their business, and their business has grown 15 times in 15 years. So it's just an example of, regardless of the industry, how companies can transition from being in a product-only business, as you think about it, into a super sweet spot.
And, Bob, I understand that one of the things your business focuses on, or even the major things that it focuses on, is helping people take the specific steps that the Lincoln Company, for example, did over a 15-year period to basically be 15 times larger than it was 15 years ago.
Right. That's really the focus. Our whole focus of what we do is helping companies produce sustained How do you grow every year and do it profitably?
And part of how you do that is, as you're describing, by focusing on a niche and then sort of honing in on that even more to get the customers inside that niche that respond to you, and then communicating with them and directing products and services to them that speak to them.
Absolutely. It's all about customer relevance.
And so it's over a period of time, Bob. I mean, I know Lincoln, you know, did it over 15 years. That sounds like a long time. It's really not in the life of the business. But in terms of, like, the steps that you have to take, I know there's many, and I know that it seems like your book contains, you know, basically step by step, but what are some of the big things that businesses need to do, particularly if they're strapped for cash, like most indie businesses are? What do they need to do to take advantage of some of these growth opportunities that oftentimes do depend on having financial capital to do?
Well, you know, the real starting point is, and again, the whole principle of the must-have customer is that you don't need to do business with everybody. If you're trying to do business with everybody, it's highly likely that you've got a lot of unprofitable customers. Mm. And in the must-have customer, we talk about a series of stories of companies that had discovered that and realized they were losing money by serving certain people. So the first thing you have to do is figure out who are you serving profitably today.
Right.
And then once you understand who you're serving profitably today, you can then find out why are those customers loyal to you, mm-hmm. as opposed to going someplace else. And now you know who your must-have customers are, which are more customers just like them that are looking for the same features and benefits and uniquenesses you provide. And once you know who those people are, then you can create an advertising strategy, whether it's direct mail or email or texting or whatever. You know, today there's so many choices.
Mm-hmm.
Reach those customers with the message they want to hear. So you build your business on creating more and more core customers instead of adding, as we call them, opportunists, who are the people that you simply can't do business profitably with.
And, Bob, in your experience, what are some of the most efficient and cost-effective ways to do that, like, you know, using technological tools where the costs are typically lower than other tools?
Don, are you talking about on the communication side?
Right. Like you mentioned direct marketing, which obviously involves, you know, printed material that's mailed to a street address or a post office box. Are there some, you said email, are there some technological tools that small businesses can use that are more effective at reaching those must-have customers than others? And in your experience, what have you seen that works the best?
Well, here, the first thing most companies have to get over is when somebody comes in to sell you radio time, newspaper time, whatever it is, They tell you what their cost per thousand is and how inexpensively you can reach each person.
Okay.
But if you're reaching a lot of people that are not interested in your product, you're wasting a tremendous amount of money. So the thought that once you figure out who you want to reach, now you know that you need to reach less people. You don't need to get the message out to everybody in the world. So now you focus on less people and you spend more money per person reaching those must-have customers. So
specifically, they deliver the profit to you.
Absolutely. So direct mail, which is much more expensive per person than using the newspaper or the radio,
mm-hmm.
It's more expensive per person, but you can target exactly who you want to reach.
Right, if you're reaching the right people. Is that have you heard of the term the long tail?
Sure.
Is that sort of what you're describing?
Well, the long tail is really about products that sell in smaller quantities. It's kind of like Amazon's book strategy, you know, that they can have 3 million books listed on their website and only sell a copy or two a year of a book, but they have no cost to list it on their website. So the products have a longer life cycle because of the internet. So it's really not the same as that. This is really about very, very targeted marketing and knowing exactly who you want to reach and spending more money per contact than somebody else is, but at least you're talking to the right people.
Yeah, I can see it's quite a little bit different.
Yeah.
I've seen Donna Marie do that quite a bit. She's got blogs and newsletters to all of her indies who signed up for her service, and it seems like she's got a new outlet every couple of months, something new, and all to the indies who are already purchasing her product, basically.
Right, and the beauty, of course, of the internet is you know who's opted in, and they have said to you, I'm interested in your product. So now reaching them and communicating with them is a great investment because you know they're interested.
Mm.
Yeah, I do think all my secrets are out there, Mike. Now, but I do think that technology is such a powerful thing when you really do have to economize, which every business should do, no matter how much money you have. Of course, frugal always wins the day. Bob, tell us, what is the must-have audit?
Well, Donna, many companies do audits which really simply confirm that all the accounting that was done in the previous year was done right. And frankly, nobody makes any money doing an audit that keeps the banks happy and some people like that. But it doesn't do anything for your bottom line. And in the must-have customer, we talk about the must-have audit, which is really auditing your future, not your past. And it's helping to predict whether your business is going to grow or not. So we suggest things like doing simple research to confirm that the percentage of your business that's coming from core customers is growing, because that's certainly an indication that you're doing a better job serving your core customers. Confirming that more and more must-have customers are becoming at least aware of your business. They may not have become customers yet, but this targeted advertising you're doing is paying off because more people say, oh, yeah, I know about them, and I know about what makes them special. Confirming that your advertising, in fact, is working. And again, today, that can be done fairly easily. So the audit is really looking to the future rather than looking to the past, and it just sort of reassures you mm-hmm. that the things you're doing will, in fact, cause your business to grow over time.
You know, Bob, I'd like to speak to that for a second, just by way of example, and hopefully this will dovetail enough with what you said to really hit home with a lot of listeners. It never ceases to amaze me how often I get a new member to my organization who will join the organization, and then right after I see the membership application come through, there'll be an email saying, I've subscribed to your newsletter for 5 years, and I'm finally joining.
Right.
And so that's what you're talking about. When that happens over and over again, you essentially can confirm that something is working, at least one thing is working the way it should, and the right people are being reached.
Right. And the reality is, it takes sometimes a very long period of time to get customers to change their habits and who they're doing business with. But if you know that this is a customer that once you get them, you'll have them for life, you want to make that five-year investment because it's going to pay off, and then they'll be a customer for 20 years, and it'll have a huge return.
Well, we'll see. I haven't been at it for 20 years. Certainly hope it doesn't take everyone 5 years, but I think it's such a good point to make that the consistency of, and the degree to which you perform these audits that you talk about in your book is really what's going to turn around and, you know, make it worth the time, because you can really track where the customers are coming from and why they're coming from those particular areas.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the things that's so interesting, too, about your book that you mention is the example of Walmart and Whole Foods. I love that example because, you know, Walmart, as you mentioned earlier in the show, you know, they compete mainly on price, and of course the grocery industry is very competitive, and along comes Whole Foods several years ago and starts charging five times what Walmart does for an apple and starts making a profit.
Oh, absolutely. And the Whole Foods customer, that unique must-have customer, to Whole Foods wouldn't think of shopping at Walmart. And it's not just a matter of money. They believe they're getting a far better product. And, of course, if you've shopped in Whole Foods, it's kind of like what I talked about earlier with Walgreens. It's not just about the food. It's about the total experience that throughout the store that really enhances the product. It creates the value.
And you know, Bob, when you're indie, which oftentimes means it's you and maybe your spouse or your daughters or whoever helping you out in the business, then it really is kind of, it's a mindset thing. It's delivering not just the product, but also the relational mindset that causes the person to be attracted to your product or your service.
Absolutely, and that's why, Donna, it is so important that once you make this decision as to where you believe your sweet spot can be, that you talk to customers to find out what is important to them relative to the sweet spot. Again, you know, just using Walgreens as that example with convenience, mm-hmm. What is everything I need to know about how the customer defines convenience?
Mm-hmm.
So I can focus on those things. One of the challenges in business, whether you're, you know, an independent or you're a large company, is nobody ever has enough time or enough money to do everything.
Right. Yes. Amen.
So what you got to do is you got to find out what's important to the customers. Mm-hmm. Do those things, you know, and that's really who should set the priorities. You should never set your own priorities. You've got to let your customer do it because they're the ones that control your sales.
So Mike, in terms of Emily Skin Soothers products, have you found that to be true? Have you, and obviously when you first created your products, you made them based on what you thought would work on your daughter. Has anything changed since then based on customer feedback or what they're telling you they want?
Absolutely, yeah. The first time I made it, it was based on traditional Chinese formulas, and the basis of the salve was sesame oil, which worked just fine. But smelled like sesame oil. So some people loved it, and they said it was delicious, and some people couldn't stand it and said it was like Chinese food. So it was a much smaller audience than I was hoping to reach, and I had to look into it, and I actually changed it to olive oil, which had similar properties and uses and functions, but made it a lot more palatable to the general public. So it was all, you know, customer feedback. And
people, I would guess, more people in general are familiar with olive oil than sesame oil.
Yeah, it's a lot more palatable to them. And then, of course, my products are geared towards very sensitive people. And for people who have nut sensitivity, sesame was a no-go also. So I had to kind of rethink things when I was getting feedback. You know, though it worked for my daughter, it was the initial formulation. I said, well, this isn't going to work with a wide market. So what will make it more palatable but still just as effective?
I'm guilty when I say I haven't seen your product. Does the olive oil also turn it green?
No, because we use beeswax, it's white, and then also we use a pomace form, so not the virgin, which is really green.
Right, okay. So very interesting, an example, Bob, of what you're talking about.
You know, Donna, absolutely, and I think if there's one thing that your listeners can really give some thought to,
mm-hmm.
is that they don't make the rules in their business.
Good point.
They can sell policies, but their customers make the rules. And if you don't obey your customer's rules, the customer simply walks across the street to your competition. So you have to always understand what your customer's rules are and obey those rules if you want to build a strong business.
That's such a good point. And I talked with a woman not too long ago who had started making some wonderful bath and body products, and she loved the fragrances, but her customers were not buying them. She had to, you know, we talked about, well, then you need to make those fragrances for your own self, but you need to make what they want so that you can eat.
Mm. Yep. If you want to win, you play by the customer's rules.
Wow. Well, Bob, thank you so much for joining. And for those of you who would like to learn more about Bob Gordman, visit his website at gordmangroup.com. While you're there, you'll be able to pick up a copy of his books, and he's got more than one. The one we've been talking about today is The Must-Have Customer, 7 Steps to Winning the Customer You Haven't Got. And then he mentioned a book that came out after that called Secrets of the Super Sweet Spot, which is kind of an expansion on some of the more specific sweet spot information that's in the must-have customer book. Bob, thanks for joining us today. We'll be sure to pick these up. You can also get a copy of Bob's book from the IndieBusinessRadio.com website. You can link to Bob's website from there. And also, you can link to the website of my Indie co-host today, Mike Arsenault of Emily Skin Soothers at EmilySkinSoothers.com. Thank you, gentlemen, both for joining. I'm glad that you were here today. I want you guys to know that on April 7th next week, Susan Harrow of PRSecrets.com will be here to share what? PR Secrets? That's right. This woman has been all over the country crisscrossing it. I've counseled with her personally to help prepare for some media appearances. She's fantastic, and an hour with her is well worth our time. I also want you to know that Thursday, April 3rd, this week, my group coaching starts for April. We're going to kick off The Riches Are in the Niches. That's our topic for this month. And, of course, we did blogging for March, and we did email newsletter marketing for February. And this is one of the things, Bob, that my members are telling me that I have to continue. So I'm going to continue it. I hope you guys will join me next week for another edition of Indie Business Radio. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.